all games were popular in the past. While some of them have modern descendants, most of the many ball games of the past are now completely forgotten. In this episode, we'll talk about proper ball games, noble games for decent people. Calcio, as discussed in the previous episode, wasn't a real ball game. So what was a real and noble game for decent people? Welcome to the Venetian Stories Podcast. I'm René Sandal, and I'll be your guide on this journey. This podcast is ad-free, and I intend to keep it like that. You can help by recommending it to others, sharing it online, or adding reviews on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. If you come to Venice, you can support me and the podcast by booking one of my Venetian history tours. You can find them on historywalksvenice.com. Otherwise, visit venetianstories.com for more options. Episode 16. The Game of Pallone. Antonio Scaino, in his Treatise on the Game of Ball from 1555, offers a formal definition of what a ball game was. Quote, "The game of ball is a confrontation between at least two players who assembled in a place and disposed in order, one on the one side and the other on the other, as opponents, with a solid and round instrument called ball, made of animal hide and made to bounce. They engage in battle, employing each, so the victory may fall to their side, every possible effort in sending it, the ball, towards the adversary, hitting it when it is in the air, after the first bounce, and at times accidentally, which is when the player in that instant that the ball falls to the ground just before it rebounds in high, between touching the ground and in the air, retakes it and sends it to the other end of the field." End quote. That is one page, one paragraph, one sentence. Welcome to the writing style of the early modern period. Single paragraphs spanning several pages was the order of the day. If it required an effort to write it, it should require at least the same effort to read it, preferably more. To recapitulate the above definition, a ball game is characterized by two teams of players in a playing field divided in two parts, one for each team, using a ball, lobbing the ball back and forth between the teams until one team fails to return it correctly by hitting the ball in the air or after a single rebound. The modern games of tennis and volleyball fit into this definition, but ancient and modern football don't. That is why Scaino didn't consider the game of calcio a real ball game. Scaino, being the trained academic, used this definition to classify six games into three groups based on the ball used, the way the playing field was divided, and how the players struck the ball. Two games used an inflated ball for a faster and more powerful gameplay, but also with issues of balls deflating or exploding mid-game. They are Gioco del Pallone, the game of the big ball, or Palla da Pugno, fist ball, using arm guards and teams of three or four. This was the quintessential game of ball, which we shall discuss in detail later. And the Gioco del Scanno, with smaller balls, wooden bats, and teams of three or four. The other four games used a stuffed ball, usually full of wool fibers, which was slower and rebounded less. Two of these games were played on a field with just a line on the ground to separate the two halves. We have Gioco della Palla Sorta Fatto alla Distesa, literally, game of firm ball on an open field, played with open hands or flat bats. And the gioco della racchetta alla distesa, the game of racket on an open field, played with, surprise, rackets. The two remaining games were similar, but had the field divided by a rope, sometimes with a net hanging underneath, so the ball would have to pass over the rope. We have gioco della palla sorda fatto alla corta, the game of firm ball at the rope, played with open hands or bats, and the gioco della racchetta alla corta, the game of racket at the rope, played with rackets. The last one should be recognizable as a precursor of modern tennis. Maybe except the modern tennis balls are inflated and not stuffed. It should be clear, most of these games didn't have proper names. They were all variations of a generic game of ball, which Skino mentioned in the title of his treatise. The variations differed in the type and size of ball used, how the ball was hit, and how the court was divided in two halves. What they all had in common was a gameplay of knocking the ball back and forth between the two teams, who were separated and had no direct physical contact. Points were won when the opposing team failed to return the ball correctly. The first two games, due to the power imparted on the inflated ball, required a larger playing field. They were therefore mostly played outside, which in Venice meant in the campi, public squares of the city. The other games, especially the ones a la corta, with the net in the middle, could be played in smaller spaces and consequently also inside. In Venice, by the 1700s, there were several indoor playing fields for racchetta in various parts of the city. The gioco del pallone, the game of the big ball, also called palla da pugno, fist ball, or palla al bracciale, ball with an arm guard. Skino wrote in Florentine, even if he offered excuses that he wasn't fully versed in that language. In Venetian, these games was the gioco del brassal or gioco del pallone. Why such differences? There was no Italian language until the nationalist movements of the 1800s caused one to be created. The people of Venice, Ferrara, and Florence spoke different languages with notable differences in grammar, vocabulary, and pronunciation. They could mostly understand each other, and especially members of the upper classes, whose way of speaking converged as they traveled, studied, interacted, and intermarried more across country borders than the lower classes did. So Florentine and Venetian were two different languages of two different countries. But back to our game of ball. The gioco del pallone was probably the quintessential ball game and what was meant if nothing else was specified. Let's have a look at the gear used. In origin, it was played with an inflated ball hit with a closed fist. But soon various protections developed into a rather articulate arm guard. The arm guard was made of wood, walnut or ash most commonly, a round piece of wood about twice the diameter of the player's forearm with the cord drilled out so their hand could pass through. The length of the arm guard should be from the wrist to a few fingers width short of the elbow. There are some illustrations in the show notes on the Venetian Stories website, so click through to have a look. Preparing for a game, the player wrapped his forearm with a piece of woolen or linen cloth and then slid his forearm, right or left at his leisure, into the arm guard. If it was too loose, other pieces of cloth were used to make a comfortable fit. The player held the arm guard in place by closing his fist around a stick which was mounted across the lower end. Sometimes a protrusion of the main arm guard served as a further protection for the hand, not unlike what one commonly sees on sword hilts. The main cylindrical part of the brazal was covered in spikes, so it had a hedgehog-like appearance. They were pyramid-shaped and either cut into the wood or nailed on. This rugged surface of the arm guard lessened the impact on the player's arm, prevented the greasy ball, as we shall see, from slipping, but also allowed the player to spin the ball to make it harder for the opponent to return it correctly. According to Skyno, 7 bands of 15 spikes each were the correct number. Strings were often bound tightly around the arm guard in between the bands of spikes to prevent it from breaking during a game or to hold a cracked or broken brazal together so it could be reused. Each player no doubt had his preferred brazal, which he would rather not depart with. A correctly fitted arm guard would allow the player to deliver a forceful blow, both forehand and backhand, without causing any pain or injury. Some players could even, theatrically, hit the ball behind their back. The ball used for the Gioco del Pallone was an inflated ball about the size of a modern football or a bit bigger. Skyno says the diameter should be around 1 Roman foot and an ounce, which I believe is a bit more than 30 centimeters. For the curious, I based this on an Italian manual in Metrologia, Weights and Measures, from the 1880s, which has conversions from all the commonly used ancient measures used in the pre-unification Italian states to metric. A Roman foot was approximately 29.8 centimeters, subdivided into 16 ounces. The ball was made of 3 layers, an inner layer to contain the air, either the bladder of an animal or very fine leather sewn together and greased copiously, a middle layer of suede to protect the air chamber, and an outer layer of well-greased goatskin leather. Goatskin leather, often called maroquin, is thin, soft, flexible, and very expensive. Each layer of the ball was comprised of 8 identical pieces, which, when sewn together, looked triangular, with a small square reinforcement where 4 such pieces met. Skyno emphasized the need for the ball to be greased generously, so the outside shell of goatskin leather would retain its flexibility and expand evenly, so the ball remained perfectly round when inflated. The greasiness of the balls might be one of the reasons for the spikes on the arm guard. Had the brazal been smooth, the player would have very little control of where the ball actually went. It was not unusual for balls to explode or deflate suddenly during the games. In such cases, the point wasn't lost and the game replayed afresh. The balls had to be inflated quite hard, so each ball was used for one game and then handed over to an infiador, an inflator, who would inflate the ball again using a schizzetto, a pump which looked a bit like a manual bicycle pump. Each of the two teams were 3 or 4 players, of which one was the battitore, the hitter. To his left, the spalla, shoulder, or sentina, a term also used in Venetian rowing, meaning the second most important of the crew. And the last was the terzina, third, of which there could be 2, both to the right of the hitter. In the show note, there's a detail of a Venetian engraving from the 1700s showing this lineup of the teams. To start a round of the game, called a caccia, or in Venetian a cassa, an assistant, called the mandarin, threw the ball into the air in front of the hitter, who, either standing still or running down a ramp, hit the ball with his arm guard. The hitter had to send the ball into the opposite half of the court. The ball had to pass the center line in the air, not stray outside the playing area, neither to the sides nor in the back. The players of the opposing team could hit the ball only once, either before it hit the ground or after a first rebound, to return it to the other team. If they failed to hit it, or if it rebounded twice, or started rolling on the ground, or if they sent it off the playing area, they lost the round. No part of the players could touch the ball, if not hitting it with their arm guard. The arm guard was not allowed to touch the ground when striking the ball. If the playing field had a wall on one side, the players could be allowed to bounce the ball off the wall without losing the catcher. This playing back and forth repeated until one team failed to return the ball without fault. So a round could go on for quite some time if two equally skilled teams faced each other. Another assistant counted the points as the rounds progressed. Each catcher was worth 15 points, so the progression was 15, 30, 45 game. The game was won when one team reached 60 points, provided there were two catcher in advantage. If both teams arrived at 45, the score was reset to 30-30, and play would continue until one team won two successive catcher. When that happened, no matter how many rounds they played, the score would still be 30-60. Over time, the assistant who counted the points began to shorten the announcement, so the sequence 15-30-45 game became 15-30-40 game. A game would therefore consist of at least four catcher, but could in principle go on indeterminately. Victories were divided in three categories. A simple victory was a normal, straightforward win worth 1 point. A double victory happened when the opposing team won no catch at all. That is, when one team won all the first four consecutive catch. Such a victory was valued double. The third category was called triple or rabioso, literally raging or furious. A victory was rabioso when one team had been down 0 to 45 and yet went on to win in straight sets. This could only happen if one team won the first three consecutive catcher and then the other team the next five consecutive catcher. A furious victory was valued triple. Matches could consist of many games, but at the time of Skaino, there don't seem to have been any formal rules. Maybe the players just agreed beforehand how many games to play, like best of seven, or they agreed on a number of points needed for a match victory, since some games could be double or triple. Or they simply played for a predetermined time and the team with the most points at the end won. Later on in the 1800s, when the game of pallone became a more organized sport with special arenas for the games, rules for longer matches appeared. Then one team started each catcher for two consecutive games, which were called a trampolino. The name is derived from the ramp or trampoline the hitter sometimes descended for the initial blow. A complete match consisted of a number of trampolini, usually five. Consequently, instead of game, set, match, as in modern tennis, they had catcher, game, trampolino, match. The value of a single game was important, not just for the game itself, but for all the betting and gambling which inevitably happened around the matches. Gambling was inevitable for several reasons. First of all, the Venetians were compulsive gamblers. The word casino originates in Venice, in the meaning of a venue for gambling. And the Republic of Venice even ran an official casino, to which only Venetian and foreign nobles had access. This place was a palace not distant from San Marco, near the San Moise church, called the Ridotto, in the sense of a meeting place. In the 1700s, the Ridotto was a fixture on the Venetian high-end entertainment scene. Another reason why betting and gambling around the matches were inevitable was that they happened in public spaces. The space required for a game was such that no indoor venue of the time was sufficient. In Venice, the game of pallone was therefore played in public under an open sky. The most popular playing fields in Venice were the Campo di San Giacomo d'Alorio in the Sestiere Santa Croce and the Campo dei Gesuiti in Canaretto. Giuseppe Tassini, in his inevitable Curiosità Veneziane for the entry Giacomo d'Alorio, quotes a document from the archives of the late Venetian historian Emanuele Antonio Cicogna. Quote, "The noble game of pallone started with our patricians in Campo di San Giacomo d'Alorio in the previous century, 1600s. Not, however, with the frequency of today, but because of the quantity of grass in the said place, it was transported to the Campo dei Gesuiti for several years. With the increase of the numbers and valor of the players, it was decided to pave over the above-mentioned Campo di San Giacomo in the year 1711, with the year carved in marble at the mark of the hitter." End quote. Public squares in Venice are called campi, which means fields, exactly because they weren't paved. Grass grew in the squares and animals ate the grass. According to this document, one of the main squares of Venice was paved over explicitly to make it better suited for the game of pallone. Fun and games are no trifling matter. In the entry for Gesuiti, Giuseppe Tassini wrote, quote, "The game of pallone was prohibited in the Campo dei Gesuiti by decree of the Council of Ten, April 21st, 1711, end quote. So, in 1711, the game was banned at the Gesuiti, but not wanting to stop playing, the players spent money to revert in style to the previous venue. They did take their fun and games rather seriously. From the Campo dei Gesuiti, we have a marvelous engraving from one of the first decades of the 1700s, by an unknown artist, but published by Domenico Lovisa sometimes after 1715. This engraving is in the show notes. There are some quite interesting details in this print. In the central part, we see the two teams of four lined up for a caccia. The team closest to us start the game, and the hitter is ready to hit the ball, which the mandarin is about to toss in the air in front of him. Two more balls lie ready at the feet of the mandarin. The players appear relaxed, but ready for the serve. A half circle of spectators stand between us and the players. So far, so good. However, if we look carefully on the right side of the crowd, there's a bit of disorder. Several curtains are falling and chairs have been knocked over. An excited dog is barking at the people on the ground. Close to the wall, a man is being knocked over by a large ball which is hitting him in the head. On the other side of the half circle of spectators, there's a similar scene. Chairs knocked over, people lying on the ground. Three well-dressed men are leaving, two of them with their hats in their hands. One is looking back towards the game in disgust, while the other dusts the dirt off his hat. They've had enough. A man with a crutch is running towards the canal in the foreground of the print. Following him, we find the ball which caused the chaos. It is striking the rower of a gondola passing by. The man is crouched down to deflect the blow, his hat knocked off, while his mistress is rushing out of the boat's cabin to see if he's hurt. The game was banned at the Gesuiti in 1711, and this engraving was published just a few years later, sometimes between 1715 and 1720. It is difficult not to see these marginal, almost humorous episodes in the print as a critique of the game and of the danger it presented to the spectators and to casual passers-by. A danger which might have been the reason for the ban on the game in that square. The lasting popularity of the game of Pallone is attested by the many entries for terms related to the game in the 1829 Dictionary of the Venetian Language by Giuseppe Boerio. Besides all the major terms for the game, the players, its equipment and gameplay, he mentioned several sayings and idioms which were derived from the Gioco del Pallone. Here's the entry, Giocare al Pallone, playing at ball. Quote, balling or playing at ball. The pallone is a large ball for games, made of leather and full of air by means of a hole which inside is closed by a valve, which is hit by the arm with a guard of wood covered in spikes. End quote. This is, of course, the game we now all know and love. However, he also has Giocare al Pallone de uno, playing at ball with somebody or playing somebody at ball. Quote, figuratively speaking, playing somebody, pulling somebody here and there, one wanting one thing, another thing. End quote. I think we call that gaslighting today. Regarding the brazal, the armguard, Boerio lists the expression venir sul brazal, to fall on the armguard. Quote, figuratively speaking, cutting across, the rebound of a ball into the hand, the arrival of an opportunity. End quote. And aspettarò che mi venga sul brazal. I'll wait for it to fall on the armguard. Quote, waiting for the pick at the oak or the rebound of the ball, said figuratively. End quote. Now, few of us modern city dwellers ever wait for picks under oaks, but the meaning is that of an easy win. I'll wait until it comes around by itself. What goes around comes around. For the less experienced or learned in porcine matters, that is related to swine, hogs, pigs and such, pigs like acorns, which is the fruit of the oak. So if you wait under the oak, the pigs will come around to stuff their snouts when they get peckish. The activities in ancient Venice have often also left traces in the place names in the city, and ball games are no exception. In Canareggio, near Santa Caterina, an alleyway have the name of Calle della Racchetta, literally the alleyway of the racket. In the 1700s, it was the site of an indoor playing ground for racchetta alla corta, primordial tennis. In the city of San Marco, there's a corte and a Calle dei Palloni. The property registries of 1566 show that a maker and or seller of balls for ball games resided there. The Gioco del Pallone was played in much of northern Italy, well up into the 1800s and into the 1900s. It was a very popular game until maybe the 1920s, with an official league, competitions, rules and whatnot. It's possible to find photos of the games online. The playing grounds used were called sferisteri, and some of them still exist and are now used like for open-air theaters. That was today's episode of Venetian Stories. Thank you for traveling with me. The next episode will land whenever I have time to record it, but if all goes well, within a couple of weeks. If you happen to come to Venice, come join one of my tours about the history of Venice. You can find them at historywalksvenice.com.